In January, we're going to start a series on the Sermon on the Mount. And that series is going to take us deep into 2020. I'm not sure. I started to say into the spring, but who knows? It may go longer because, you know, there's a lot in the Sermon on the Mount. We are, this month, though, going to be talking about Jesus is coming. Also known as Advent. But he's coming in so many different kinds of ways. And so we're talking about his birth. We're talking about his arrival on the scene as a teacher and a rabbi. We're talking about his baptism. We're talking about his friend John the Baptist. All these stories are found in the first four chapters of Matthew. So if you want to read about what we're going to do the next few weeks, just read in those first four chapters. Jeremy and I haven't really decided what exactly we're going to preach about yet, but it's going to be in the first four chapters of Matthew, so go there if you would. Today, we're going to talk about this idea that is this reality, really, this I'm going to say this reality that is communicated by the word Emmanuel. Wait a minute. Bingo. Emmanuel, which means God with us. Pleased as man with men to dwell, Jesus, our Emmanuel. We sang that this morning as we're singing, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. The angel were singing some good news, and the good news was God is going to come be with us. Let's go ahead and get this out of the way. There's two ways to spell Emmanuel. Both of them are correct. Either with an E or an I. Now, some of you are E people, and some of you are I people. But the main thing, it's a transliteration anyway, the word Emmanuel. It's not really Greek or Hebrew, but it's a transliteration like the, we call the word baptize. It's a transliteration from a Greek word, baptizo. You get it? So it's not really the translation of the word. It's a transliteration of the word. But it means God with us. What it means, God with us, whether it's Greek or Hebrew, it means God with us. And so, as we're going to talk about this idea, God with us today, it's going to show up again in a song we're going to sing at the end. Excuse me. Matthew chapter 1. We're talking about the birth of Jesus. Jesus is coming. He's on the way. And the first thing that Matthew does in talking about Jesus, he goes through all of his ancestry.com. And he goes back and finds out that actually, not only was Art from Sweden, that Jesus had all these different people in his background. And some of them were great, heroic kind of people, and some of them were scandalous kind of people. But that's what Matthew 1 starts like, and then it talks about Joseph, his earthly father. And then it says these verses. I'm going to start with verse 22. This is verse 23 on the screen. But verse 22 says, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. That's going to be real important in just a minute. All this took place. All what? All what took place? Well, there's going to be a baby born to a virgin. Is to this carpenter guy in Nazareth, and all this genealogy is all this took place to fulfill what was said by the prophet. And then it says, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they'll call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Okay, now, key point here is what did the prophet say? All this took place to fulfill what was said by the prophet. What did the prophet say? Well, he said what's on the screen. That's what the prophet said. They're going to call him Emmanuel. Emmanuel. God is with us. God is with us. Now, I think, and because this is the way I think, When you read something like this, this is to fulfill what was said by the prophet. And then it comes up with this verse, this saying. It says, what does this mean? There must be some context around this, right? Oh, everybody in our church is going to say, yeah, because we are a context kind of interested people. And so this is what fascinates a lot of us about the Bible study that Steve facilitates. Right, Steve? That Steve facilitates before our worship time is there's so much background, there's so much richness in the background. And so what we're going to do today is say, what did the prophet say? What did the prophet mean? Because really there's a hidden meaning in this verse and in this word, Emmanuel. All right, are you ready? And that's where we're headed today. So the other thing about this scripture, these first four chapters of Matthew, Jesus is coming. It starts with a quote from the prophet Isaiah. This is the one right here. And it ends with a quote. And so we're going to go to chapter 4, and I'm going to read to you this. 30 years later, Jesus moved to Capernaum, and he began his ministry. And he was still fulfilled. So I'm going to read to you Matthew chapter 4. I didn't put this on a slide, but this is Matthew chapter 4, verse 12, okay? When Jesus heard that John had been put in prison, okay, several things have happened. 30 years have passed. Jesus had just gotten baptized. He's just been out in the wilderness with Satan. Camp out in the wilderness with Satan. His cousin, John the Baptist, was preparing the way. And so when he heard that John was put in prison, he withdrew to Galilee, leaving Nazareth, that's his home. He went and lived in Capernaum, which was by the lake in the area of Zebulun and of Naphtali, to fulfill what was said through the prophet Isaiah. Okay, you with me how this is sort of the sandwich, this is the bread. You know, one piece at the beginning, you're going to call him Emmanuel. And then this other piece, this was to fulfill what was said through the prophet Isaiah. What did the prophet Isaiah say? He said this, land of Zebulun and land of Naphtali, the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people living in darkness have seen a great light. And on those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. Okay, and we are saying, woo, what? So what is that about? But for all the people who Matthew was writing to, they knew all of this stuff. You know why? Because unlike us, they had really taken the deep dive into Isaiah, and they knew the story. They knew the story of the first Emmanuel, not Jesus, God with us, but a different God with us. So we're going to do that too. We're going to take a little dive into the story of Ahaz and Hezekiah. Okay? So these stories take place. They're told several different places in the Old Testament. One is in 2 Kings chapter 16 and through really chapter 20. And there's a couple other stories in there too. But this starts out. And then it's also in 2 Chronicles, and it's also in the book of Isaiah. So I'm going to talk to you, and I'm going to summarize the story of Ahaz and Hezekiah for you. And you say, yes, you do. That's exactly what you say. Thank you, Bob. Okay, Ahaz became king of Judah. Okay, there's two kind of Israelite countries, Israel in the north, Judah in the south. They're split. They hate each other. They're cousins who have decided they don't like each other, and they've been at war for decades, okay? Several kings have come and gone, and they've been fighting. And Ahaz is the king of that southern group, Judah. He's the king of Judah. And he's got a problem. His son is going to be Hezekiah. He's got a problem. Israel in the north, northern border of him, is attacking him. And so is this other country called Aram. Now, in the big geopolitical scheme of the day, there were superpowers. And the superpowers were Assyria. Say Assyria. Good. Just want to make sure you're with me there. Assyria is the superpower, and Egypt is a superpower. Now, these other countries live in between these two, and they think they're something, but they're really not. You know, I don't want to use any of today's examples, because you might be from there, like we didn't know Art was from Sweden. I don't want to talk bad about a country that maybe you're from. So, but Israel, Judah, and Aram, they're nothing really, but they're fighting each other. And Aram and Israel are kind of taking the sides with Egypt. But they're fighting against Judah, who is, that's Ahaz's little group. And Ahaz has a decision to make. And his decision is, how is he going to fight off these other two people, Israel and Aram? How's he gonna fight him and still stay safe in this big other political thing that's going on? Because Assyria is huge and Egypt is huge, but these others are small. But he's afraid of the small enemy. And so what he decides to do is what God tells him not to do. What he decides to do is make a treaty with Assyria. Because if he can get that big boy on his side, and he gets in a fight with the little guys, he thinks he can win. But God says, don't do that. Because if you get in an alliance with them that's political, pretty soon you'll be worshiping their gods. Have you ever noticed how that happens sometimes? You begin to do something. It's not necessarily wrong on the outside, but pretty soon you've perhaps compromise some of your own really beliefs. Okay, well, maybe I'm the only one, but this is the problem with Ahaz. And so here's how the story goes. I'm going to read it from 2 Chronicles, how this goes. The Lord humbled Judah. Man, that's a bad thing when the Lord has to humble you. The Lord has humbled me. The Lord usually gives you signs, and he'll tell you, don't do this and don't do this. And he wants you to humble yourself, but when he has to do it, it's usually bad consequences. The Lord humbled Judah because Ahaz, the king of Israel, had promoted wickedness. Tiglath, the king of Assyria, had came to him, but he gave him trouble instead of help. So Ahaz took some of the things from the temple, from the royal palace, and presented it to the king of Assyria. But that didn't help either. In this time of trouble, King Ahaz became even more unfaithful to the Lord. What happened is, he made a treaty with Assyria. Assyria helped him a little bit, but he took over his kingdom. Does that make sense? He says, I'm gonna fight off these enemies of yours, and he did that. But he said, not only that, though, I'm gonna take you in captivity too. And the only way you're going to be able to get out of it is give me some of your prized possessions, the things you should never have given away. You all see how that goes? So Ahaz had this warning from God, don't do this. Don't make an alliance with Assyria. But he did it anyway. Here's how Isaiah is God's man. He's trying to warn him. He said, don't do this thing, Ahaz. And here's how this reads. I'm going to read from Isaiah chapter 7. The Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son, and say to King Ahaz, be careful. Don't be afraid. Don't lose heart because of these two smoldering stubs of firewood. He's talking about Israel and Aram. Don't be afraid of them. You've heard that they say, let's invade Judah and tear it apart and divide it among ourselves. But that will not happen. God says, that will not happen. It's not going to happen. Within 65 years, both of these countries will be shattered. This is what God's telling Ahaz. I'm going to take care of you. And then he says this, if you don't stand firm, though, in your faith, you will not stand at all. That's a wall hanging right there. If you don't stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. And again, the Lord spoke to him. He says, Ahaz, ask me for a sign. But Ahaz says, I can't ask God for a sign. I don't want to put the Lord to a test. Then Isaiah said, oh, hear now. Is it not enough to try the patience of human beings? You're also trying the patience of God. So here's what God will do. A virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will call him Emmanuel. Okay, what has this got to do with baby Jesus, little baby Jesus? Little baby Jesus is coming, and Matthew says, this is what you're going to do. This is what's going to happen with Jesus. Well, this is where it comes from this. He says, this Emmanuel kid is going to be a sign. Okay. In the day of Ahaz and in this moment, Isaiah wasn't talking about Jesus. Isaiah had maybe a small little bitty inkling of who Jesus was going to be, but probably not. He wasn't thinking about Jesus. He was thinking about his own situation at the moment. Are you with me on that? Just nod, even if you're not. Even if you're not. So here's what happens in the rest of that story. He said, what's going to happen is you're going to be destroyed by Assyria. And here's how chapter 8 of Isaiah reads. Someone's going to tell you to consult a medium or spiritist who is going to whisper and mutter and that you should not inquire of the Lord your God, but that will lead you to destruction. He says, distressed and hungry, you will roam through the land. You'll be famished and become enraged, looking upward, and you'll curse your king and you'll curse God. And you'll look toward the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom. So what's going to happen is, you're not trusting God, Assyria is going to smash you. And then he said, but nevertheless. Okay, this is going to be the second quote you heard in Matthew chapter 4. Nevertheless, there'll be no gloom for those who were in distress. This is exactly what Matthew 4 says. I'm reading from Isaiah 9. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun, the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor the Galilee of nations. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. And those living in the land of deep darkness, for those a light has dawned. For you have enlarged the nation and increased their joy, and they rejoice before you. The people rejoice like they do at harvest, or as soldiers rejoice after winning a war. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. And he will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom. He will establish justice and righteousness. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. See, now these are words that were spoken about Jesus. But first they're spoken about this other person who was born, who was named Emmanuel. Who is that in the context of Israel, Judah, Aram, Assyria? Who was that? Well, me and some other guys who are really smart and write books about it, scholars. It's Hezekiah, who was his son. So Hezekiah comes up to a very similar situation. Ahaz dies because he dies of old age, but he was died of old age at the age of like 50. Hezekiah, his son, becomes king. Still, Assyria is their enemy, even though they've been totally decimated by Assyria's army. Over the next few years, it grows. Hezekiah is a good king. Everybody's getting rich. Everybody's getting healthy. The land is revived, everything's going good, and here comes Assyria again. The giant superpower army of the day. And they surround Jerusalem, and they say to Hezekiah, you should give up. And if you don't give up, if you don't bow down to our king, we're going to destroy you. And that would have happened. But Isaiah comes and said, don't do that. Don't believe them. Trust instead in God. Exactly what he had told Hezekiah's dad. Hezekiah's dad had not believed Isaiah that God could help him, even though against all odds it didn't seem like it would work, like God could protect him without having this alliance. But Hezekiah said, I'm not going to bow down to you. Instead, I'm going to trust Yahweh, our God. And what God did in 2 Kings chapter 20, he sent an angel who killed 125,000 Assyrian soldiers. And they went back, the king went back to Assyria, and his sons murdered him and took over. And Hezekiah was then nominated for Emmanuelship. Okay, well, it doesn't really say it like that. But the point of God with us, who is God? What does it mean God is with us? I'm going to call you God with us. I'm going to call you Emmanuel. What it means is God is going to fight your battle. God is going to answer your prayers. God is going to lead you into a good and prosperous life. Not necessarily in every way. It doesn't mean he's going to fix every problem you've got, but in time, he's going to lead you to health. He's going to lead you to satisfaction. God is with you. He's going to protect you. He's going to fight for you. He's going to fight your battles for you. What does this mean for Matthew's audience? Matthew's audience probably was writing to a church, probably in Antioch, where Matthew lived, writing for his own church, probably in the days after the fall of Jerusalem to the Romans in 70 AD. So probably 50, 60 years after Jesus had died. And he's writing to a church that says, who's in a similar situation, should we bow down to Rome, who seems to be wiping out everybody, including Jerusalem, was destroyed in around 60 to 70 AD. What should we do? What should we do? And so Matthew writes them the story of Jesus. And in the story that Matthew writes to them, he reminds them of their ancestors. And he says, don't forget, in these two sentences, name him Emmanuel, and you're going to hear a light has dawned among us. In these two sentences, these guys flash back, because they're Jews, okay? What do Jews know? They know the Bible. They're going to flash back to the story of Emmanuel, Ahaz, Hezekiah, and they're going to say, God's with us like he was with Hezekiah. God is with us. And who is this God with us now? It's Jesus. Okay, for these guys, Jesus had already died, but he had been raised from the dead. And so here they are living in a Roman world, and now they're deciding, who are we going to be? And this sets up the rest of the story of Matthew, right? So this is the beginning of the story of Jesus in Matthew. God is with us. God is with us. God is with us. Here's what I want to ask you. Now it's not just 50 years after the death of Jesus. It's a couple of thousand years after the death of Jesus. Who is Emmanuel now? Who is Emmanuel for you? Who is Emmanuel today? For Isaiah, who was the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace? Who was that? It was Hezekiah. When Matthew wrote to his audience, it was Jesus. It still is Jesus. He's with us. But it's more than that. It's more than that. Who is God with us? All right, Art, I want you to do that again. And now I want everybody to look at Art as he does it. Who is it?
It's us.
Yeah, it's us. God is with us, and he's in us. And as he lives in us, God is with everywhere you go. Everywhere you go. So, in 2013, I'm teaching a group of sophomores Bible at ACU. And as I'm teaching them Bible, here's how I'm teaching an Old Testament survey, and the way I did it, we ended up with Isaiah. That's how we ended our, we didn't end with Malachi, we'd already done that. We ended with Isaiah. And we ended with Isaiah 61, and really we talked about some other things, but we're going to look right now at Isaiah 61. If you got a Bible, we're going to read it, a little bit of Isaiah 61. And I sent them home at Thanksgiving, because you know, after Thanksgiving, the college semester is pretty much done. So I sent them home with this letter called Emmanuel. What? Yeah. And we had studied this idea from Isaiah 61. So I'm going to read this to you, Isaiah 61. It says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom from the captives, and to release from darkness for the prisoners." Okay, so the question is, in verse 1 of Isaiah, says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me." Who is me? Who is me? Well, it could be that the person saying, it's me, the prophet, Isaiah himself, the Spirit's on Lord on me. Now, you know, Jesus quotes this in Luke about himself. But most likely in Isaiah 61, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me," it's talking about the people of Israel, or as I like to say, God's people. Like, for instance, what did Art just say? You. We are God's people, and the Spirit of the Lord is on you. Because God is with you, and wherever you go, God shows up. Wherever you go, God shows up. And he shows up doing his God thing. What is that? He's preaching good news to the poor. He's binding up the brokenhearted. He's proclaiming freedom for the captives, a release from darkness from the prisoners. And this is what we've done all morning here. Even here, we've told stories of God doing this in us. We told a story before Pam got here. Pam, we were telling stories about you. We told stories about Steve's eye. We told Sally told stories about two of her students. We're telling stories about what? God in us doing these things. Because God is with us. And because he's with and in us, God is wherever we go. This is God in action. And this is why these verses come alive in Matthew when you know this story of, you've got the choice in your life to be Ahaz or Hezekiah. Are you going to make an alliance with the world and worldly ways? Or are you going to trust God? And everywhere you go trusting God, God is with you. And then you are God in that situation. But if you don't, God's not with you when you're not trusting. He's with you, but you're not making yourself available to what he's offering. This was the problem with Ahaz. Ahaz says, "I can't test God. That would be too much for me to put God to the test." And God said, "Please test me. I want to do great things through you." Ahaz says, "I can't do that. Instead, I'm going to make an alliance with the world." How about it? Then Hezekiah, just the opposite. I'm going to put all my eggs in God's basket. Is that us? Well, that's when God is with you. That's when God is with you. Two and a half years ago, I showed you guys this picture. Okay? About 5 years ago, my dad met a man named Mike who had just gotten out of prison. This is Mike's stuff. This is Mike's fourth eviction that we went through together, where I'm helping Mike move his stuff to my carport. This is what happens when you don't pay your rent in Abilene, Texas. They come throw your junk out in the street, probably everywhere. Mike was an alcoholic. He'd gone to prison. He'd gone to prison because he had... strike three, you're out in Texas, and you go to prison for drinking while driving if you do it for three times. He got out, found it very difficult to get a job when he has a ankle bracelet on. He found it very difficult to live life. But God with Dad, God with us, Dad kind of took him under his wing. He'd take him to different places to get a job, to apply for jobs. He'd take him to work until eventually Mike would get fired. This happened over and over again. This was kind of the thing. And Dad decided he's going to stick with him. And they would have arguments about alcoholism and drug abuse, because Mike had excuse for everything he did. Dad's not a take excuses kind of guy. But as soon as Mike would mess up, Dad would say this, and I've heard Dad say this dozens of times. He said, "I'm done with him. I can't do that again. He's taken advantage of me for the last time." And then a couple of days later, I'd be at the house and I'd say, "Where's Dad?" "Oh, Mike called him and he's gone to apply for another job." I said, "Okay. Where's Mike living?" "Well, I think he's at the Salvation Army." "Yeah, this is it." Mike's now, he's had a job with Goodwill for the last 12 months, living in the same home. And Mike had some issues with abuse at a church when he was a young boy. And so he's not been very favorable towards churches. But he loves God because Dad has loved Mike. God with us. When Dad showed up in Mike's life, God showed up. And that's how you are. That's how all of us are. And this is the text that Mike sent to Dad on Tuesday morning. He had just taken him to work again. Mike now has his ankle bracelet off. He's actually got his driver's license again. Wow, that's incredible. He's got a job. He's got a place where he lives. He said, "Sir, you gave me an early Christmas." That was the ride he gave him to work. "Thank you. I'm giving you an early birthday." My dad's birthday is this week. He'll be 90 years old. 90 years old. If I could give you one thing, it would be the ability to see yourself through my eyes. Only then would you be able to see how special a person you have been to me. God bless you." The people living in darkness have seen a great light. You know the light they see? They see you when you show up at your place of work. This is the way I said it to the students in 2013. Today, Emmanuel is you. You have been and are Emmanuel. You are God incarnate in your family, at your school, where you work, in your church, on the street, in the restaurants, everywhere you go. You are God in the flesh to the poor and brokenhearted. Like in Isaiah 61, who is the me in Isaiah 61? It may seem to be the prophet, but as we have said, the me is the Israelites, or perhaps more appropriately, it's the people of God, or more personally, it's you. You are Emmanuel. You are the one to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives. God is with us, and we have the power to be Emmanuel for others because God is Emmanuel in us. He is with us. That's who we are. That's who our God is. He's with us. We're going to stand and sing another Emmanuel song. They're all over the place. And whether you spell it with an E or an I, it really doesn't matter. What matters is that God is with us. And because He is with us and in us, we change the world. God changes the world through us.